I'll call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that the time is currently 2:26 p.m. on Tuesday, February 27th, 2018. Present today, we have Representative Pruitt, Representative Kawasaki, Representative Wilson, Vice Chair Guerra, Co-Chair Seaton, Representative Tilton, Representative Gren, Representative Guttenberg, Representative Thompson, and myself, Co-Chair Foster. And before we start, just a reminder, folks could mute their cell phones. And so today we will be taking up language amendments to HB 285, which is the mental health budget bill, and HB 286, the operating budget bill. And so, Co-Chair Seaton, if you could move your first amendments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move SAP 1, okay. Supplemental intent.
We have an objection. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This amends Section 4 to make it a legislative intent section and restores the annual language regarding supplemental budget requests and moves the existing language regarding the cost of job reclassification to a new subsection B.
Thank you. Representative Wilson.
So does the department really listen to this language? It's put there for a reason, and so I'd like to hear the discussion, but I'm in favor of this amendment, but I truly hope that they take it to heart, because we really just, I know there's certain things that we can't predict, but there's quite a few things I think in this supplemental that's going to be for us that they could have done a much better job at it. So thank you for the amendment.
Thank you. Any other questions? Do you maintain your objection?
I remove my objection, Mr. Chairman.
Objection is removed. Any further objections? Seeing none, HSAP 1 has been adopted. Co-Chair Seaton, your next amendment.
I move HSAP 2.
Object.
You have an objection. Representative Seaton.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. This amendment reverts the wording of Section 7 regarding the ADA dividend back to the wording used in the FY18 budget that deposited the dividend into the general fund. The ADA dividend spends as unrestricted general fund. The governor's budget did not spend any ADA dividend.
Any questions or comments? Seeing none, do you maintain your objection, Representative Wilson?
No, I remove my objection, Mr. Chairman.
Objections removed. Any further objections? Seeing none, HSAP 2 has been adopted. And just to note, we were joined by Representative Ortiz. Representative Seaton, your next amendment.
Thank you. I withdraw HSAP 3 and move replacement HSAP 3. That's a separate three-page document that has been added to your packet.
Object.
And we have an objection. Representative Seaton.
Can we have a second to that?
Sure. Well, let's take a brief at ease just so folks can kind of read through it. Okay, House Finance is back on record at 2:30 p.m. Representative Pruitt.
Let Representative Seaton explain. I was just going to ask what the difference between the original one and the new one, but I'll let him talk about that in that process.
Okay, sure. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And let me explain the difference first. On the very bottom of the page there, you'll see the number, the PFD estimate of $1,258. Originally, it was $1,270. That was based on an estimated number, and now we're using the Permanent Fund Corporation's reported data rather than the estimate. So this amendment, Section 8C, by changing the 4.75 ERA draw a reduction from the governor's 5.25 draw and transferring 67% of the draw to the general fund. This is a general fund revenue reduction of $260.2 million from the governor's net transfer of $1.9 billion to the GF, down to $1.65 billion. In D, or in 8D, the percentage of the transfer to the PFD fund is changed from the governor's 30% to 33%. The amount, however, decreases from the governor's 818.9 million to 813.0 million, a decrease of 5.9 million. This amendment transfers 33% directly from the ERA instead of through the general fund as the governor proposed. The governor's PFD estimate was 1216, while this amendment results in a PFD estimate of 1258.
Representative Garrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I think obviously we're going to have more discussion and we'll have public testimony on all of these things. And I also agree that I think the public has been pretty clear that a $1,000 dividend isn't something that is widely acceptable. That's the level I think that's in the other body's permanent fund bill. And I think you do have to have public support for what you're doing. I think this level of dividend of $1,250 for starting discussion, I think certainly does not endanger the permanent fund. That's one of the big worries many of us have. And I think it's a good place to start discussion. I do think that there's been some testimony that between the 4.75% draw, which is really closer to 4.25%, and the 5.25% draw, which is really closer to 4.75%, that either of those can work for a couple of years, and then in the long term, you'll have to be more conservative. But all of that, I think all of this is a good faith start, and we'll see where we get.
Thank you, Representative Garrett. Are there any further comments? Representative Pruitt.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. My concern with this particular amendment is really it's a conversation. It's a long-term conversation that this amendment is impacting. I understand the reduction in the amount of draw from the earnings reserve, and of course the concern I think we all hold is the viability of the earnings reserve into the long term. I don't think that there's disagreement on that. But I think that the reasonableness of a little bit higher, whether it's 5.25 or 5 or a number that's pushed a little bit higher at this point in time is appropriate. And the reason it's appropriate is because of the fact that if the decision of this legislature, we saw how difficult it was this year, there's still disagreement in terms of an income tax. And that, unless that were to change next year or the year after, we could find ourselves, because of the decision now to take less, where we would be taking potentially larger unstructured draws in the future, something that could have a long-term negative effect on the fund at a later time frame. I also will recognize the conversation around the $260 million that we're discussing here. That's about the equivalent of what the governor had indicated through his tax that he wanted this year. And that tax is, of course, a payroll tax that he wanted to use for other items. And so the question is, and it's going to be a philosophical question, is what role does an income tax have or not have in the near future in the funding and the participation in Alaska's future? I think we can still maintain the value. The fund, obviously, I recognize it won't maintain at the same level in the long term, but that also is, I also am of the belief that proper policy and engagement in our economy will effectively put us in a position where additional revenues will be available for us, where we can reduce the amount of draw that we need in the future. But right now, to put ourselves in a position where we need an income tax within the next couple of years has a damaging effect to the pocketbooks of Alaskans. So do we take a little bit more now and pay appropriate policy to ensure that there's more money and revenue in our coming into the coffers in the future through proper tax policy with oil and gas, through encouraging continued investment in the North Slope, through, we'll talk about it here in a little bit, making sure that we have a proper investment environment by paying the credits that we need or facilitating a conversation around that. I think that those in themselves help us have a better conversation about being able to bring down what we need out of the fund in the future. But the income tax in the next couple of years, I don't see that as being positive. So I think the need for a little bit higher draw at this point in time is prudent for the longer term conversation of not facilitating an income tax and encouraging investment long term into our future. And so that's my concern with this amendment, and it's why I oppose this particular change that's being made. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Pruitt. Representative Wilson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I just kind of need to walk through this a little bit. I just want to make sure I have an understanding of what it does. So the reduction of the $260,150,700 from the governor's transfer is because the governor was at 5.25 and this would put it at 4.75% draw. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you. And follow up, Mr. Chairman?
Follow up.
So where exactly did the figure come from? Have you – I'm just trying – to me, we should have had this conversation at the very beginning because I don't know what our gap is with the 4.75. I honestly don't know what our gap was at the 5.25 either. And so how did you calculate that 4.75 was the right amount? Is that how much of a gap will that leave us based on what our revenue is predicted to be?
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the amount of the draw is not based on what our budget deficit is or those kind of things. The amount of a POMV draw is based on the economics of an endowment. And last year, both bodies actually passed a 5.25 for either 2 or 3 years, and then it was coming down to 5% because even then it was known that 5.25 was unsustainable, but could be a heftier draw while you were waiting for revenues to come online to start filling that bucket and then going down. Since that time, we have new actuarial reports from that have been adopted by the Permanent Fund board, which are 0.5% less, and basically it was used to be 6.95% for the next 10 years, and now it's 6.5% for the next 10 years as the average value return. And so, subtracting that 0.5%, you'll see that we are now at 4.75, and that is actually a little bit aggressive as well. And we can distribute to you the estimate of that from legislative finance, or we can get Mr. Teal up here to testify on what is aggressive, what is fully sustainable under the conditions that have been adopted by the Permanent Fund Board. And you have to remember that what we are talking about here is what is a sustainable draw, not, oh, can we overdraw in the short term because we know we'll do something in the long term, or if we're not doing anything towards solving that long-term problem, should we make a sustainable draw? And what's done here is to say that the 4.75 is a sustainable draw, which should keep up with inflation, should allow the permanent fund to grow slowly, and so that is the whole basis for the ERA draw, is the endowment model and not and letting the permanent fund value grow with inflation. And so that's the mark, so we're not drawing down the total value in relationship to inflation of the permanent fund going forward. 5.25 draws down the value of the permanent fund you know, as you go forward, if you would use that model. And my feeling is, in putting this forward, is that we should be talking about the best sustainable draw that we know, even though we want to be slightly aggressive, but we can't count on, we shouldn't be planning on reducing the overall inflation-adjusted value of the permanent fund. And so that's what 4.75, that's why that's there. It does not reduce that, but it maintains at least the inflation-adjusted value.
And a follow-up, Mr. Chairman?
Follow-up, Representative Wilson.
So with this draw and with our anticipated revenue, what would our gap be with this draw?
If we adopt the plan that the House sent over to the Senate, early funding of education, which was looking at a draw from the CBR, this fully balances our budget this year and gives us a little bit of headroom.
Follow-up?
Follow-up.
So the bill you're talking about that we passed, that would, that would be with an assumption that the whole $1.2 billion was there? Are you talking about the amount that we did budget, which would have been, you know, just the transportation, kind of the special schools? What amount specifically in that bill would have been funded to get it to where there is no gap with this figure and our revenue?
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, the this is what I'm talking about is what the bill that we approved. We didn't approve that particular draw, so those monies were taken out, but it would require about the 1.2, actually 1.1 probably from the CBR to fully balance our budget and give us the headroom that we would need to allow for any supplementals or issues next year as well. At the same level that we had for this year.
Representative Wilson.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the latitude, because really I'm not trying to debate the whole thing. I'm just trying to really figure out the number so that, because we throw a lot of analogies around there and for people to try to follow what each fund is. So I just want to verify that the $1.1 billion that the representative was talking about would include the $200 million that we'll see, in, assuming that $200 million of headroom passes within the language. So otherwise, our gap would be about $900 million based on this particular draw from the earnings reserve.
Representative Seaton.
Yes, the number was about 1.1, and that included a estimate of $200 million from the CBR for headroom.
Okay. And thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the latitude to kind of understand where it is. Again, I am going to keep my objection to this, and primarily because we should have had this at the beginning. I just find it that we're at the end of the process, and then we're going to ask for public testimony for them to decide whether or not we hit it right or not, where I just think we could have had a more targeted, if, you know, the 4.75, we'd had Mr. Teal in front of us explain why, you know, and I understand why it is from the explanation between the 5.25 and the 4.75 with the permanent fund not making quite as much as we anticipated. We also had the idea that we wouldn't stay so high for a long period of time, that it wasn't sustainable for a long period of time. But I think it would have given us, as we participated in subcommittee, a better target, knowing that with this draw, we have a $900 million deficit that we're going to have to take out of the CBR, which is approximately half of what I believe that's in it. So I just guess I wish it just would have come to us a lot sooner. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Pruitt.
Yeah, thank you, Ms. Chair. And I think it's one of the things that is important to make sure that we clarify is that if I recall, and I don't have it in front of me, but the conversation related to the presentation to the permanent fund was that the analysis stated that there was a 48% chance that over 10 years the value in the ERA would dip even a dollar below what it currently is adjusted by inflation. That does not state that we're going to be all of a sudden seeing a devaluation. That's a 48% chance that could happen. That includes looking at, and that looks back at the last 10 years with a 30% correction after the second year into it, which puts that at that potential place. So I think that to say that 5.25 is going to automatically devalue it is is not true from what the presentation was. They were indicating if we were to maintain that over the 10 years, there is a 48% chance that it could dip a dollar below the current amount adjusted for inflation. But I also want to make it very – here's the other thing that it kind of surprises me in this conversation. If we're so concerned about inflation-adjusted value, then why in the next two amendments are we not going to protect the corpus of the fund by making sure that there is an inflation-adjusted – the inflation money is placed in to protect the corpus? So I think that we're hearing a contrast in terms of the need for certain amendments here already, and we're only in, of course, the First Amendment related to the permanent fund. So I just think that that needs to be part of our conversation here, and is let's not take the extreme of what they said and automatically throw that into making an argument. Let's recognize that these were people that said there's a 48% chance we could dip below, even a dollar below, where we currently are inflation adjusted in the ERA if we were to do 5.25 over the course of this whole time. And that's why they looked at adjusting it. We don't have to do 5.25 for 10 years. But right now, in terms of where we are, is that appropriate conversation? I think it probably is.
Thank you, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would just like to make sure that we realize that, yes, there was a 48% chance of devaluing somewhat, but there was a 30% chance of the entire earnings reserve going to zero. 30% of it going to zero, which means there would be no PFD, there would be no percentage of market value that you could take out. So it's not the $1 and what's that? It is a 30% chance of the entire earnings reserve being gone. That to me is concerning, and so that's why the amendment is written the way it is.
Representative Pruitt?
Then, Mr. Chair, I think we shouldn't be increasing the budget. So you've just made an argument. We'd have to keep 5.25 for the whole 10 years to devalue it, to have that 30%. If we do that, then we have failed over the next 10 years to manage our budget. But yet this year alone, we're talking about not needing 5.25, but we're increasing the budget. So I think you have to take every single piece of the issues that we have to analyze. There's layers to this. And, yes, if we go 10 years and we use 5.25 through the whole course of those 2 years, we continue to not address the budget size, there could be a 30% chance. But that means that this legislature has failed to do their duty in controlling the size of government. They failed to do their duty in to recognize that 5.25 doesn't work. And if that's the case, then in future years – I'm sorry. We haven't truly budgeted what we're supposed to and handled what we're supposed to do. What's in front of us right now is a growth in government, therefore almost mandating the discussion where we're going to need more funds, and we're going to need funds because we have chosen as a body not to decrease. We're going to need to get it through either the earnings reserve or through some sort of taxes. And I would rather say, let's look at where we can adjust appropriately and manage, which would be the earnings reserve right now, than to look at an income tax within the next couple of years. And so I hear that, but we're also increasing the budget, and that's going to perpetuate that potential to be able to bust the earnings reserve or bust the whole thing open. And I don't know. There's not much I can do about that because I've been trying to fight it on the other side.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand the frustration around this table, but for 4 years of major budget deficits, the state's been rearranging the chairs on the Titanic, and we're going down. So we can spend the whole day arguing between 4.75 and 5.25, and I get both sides of the argument. And I tend to lean more in favor of Representative Pruitt at this point on that issue. But we had $17 billion of savings, and over the last 5 years, that's dwindled down to $2 billion of savings. And when people are talking about a balanced budget, that just means that's code at this point without anybody adopting a full fiscal plan. Many of us have tried, and But if this whole legislature doesn't adopt a full fiscal plan, balancing the budget means using the rest of our savings, half of it this year and half of it next year. So I just want to point out that this is not a sustainable course, and to indicate that there haven't been cuts, I mean, there have been $3.5 billion of cuts since 2013. 40% of the budget has been cut since 2013, and the idea that cutting the budget will solve the deficit has not worked. It's just extended the recession. And then just finally, there are ways to shore up the economy and shore up the state's finances. They don't have to include an income tax, as Representative Pruitt has suggested. Certainly, there was a vote last year to impose a small income tax on higher earners, and that didn't get enough support. But there's an easier way to do it, and frankly, if it were up to me, that simple 25% tax on oil company profits would have passed, the one that we passed in this House. That would raise $550 million this year. It would raise $700 million at current oil prices. And we wouldn't really be having this discussion. But as long as there's resistance to those with the greatest privilege chipping in, this is what we're left with. And that's not where I want to be. But you know, I hope by the end of the session, this isn't all we're talking about, that that it's okay for people with more resources to chip in too. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. maybe I'm wrong. Representative Guerra is right that a few years ago we had $17 billion in our savings. That included the CBR and the earnings reserve added together. I'm pretty sure.
SBR.
CBR and SBR.
Pardon?
CBR and statutory budget reserve.
Statutory budget reserve. All right, thank you.
Representative Pruitt?
Yeah, to that point, though, that I think he was trying to make, let's do remember that there was $3 billion that was put into to retirement to try to manage the overall cost. This year would have been somewhere in the vicinity of over $1 billion that we'd be paying that. We can just throw out a number and just start hammering it. I mean, how many times did I fight increases right here in this very committee during that time frame? So to kind of drop it that the last 4 years, $17 billion, and especially because I recognized that I was in a majority role that time, man, it was a fight to get the reductions. And so I think the recognition is, if we go back and just start saying the $17 billion, that every single one of us that has sat in these rooms over the last 10 years has to recognize we all played a role on it. We can't throw it on someone else. We can't blame future, past, or anything. We all played a role in where we are now. And if you don't like what we did during that time frame, which I think there were some good things that were done, we built some good things. I think people would argue that we've done some good things, whether it was the effect that we've had on health care, et cetera. Some could say we've gone too far, as well as what we've done in retirement. What we did in the past is different from where we are headed. And I guess that's what I keep getting tired about, is we're talking about what's in the future right now and how we manage for the future. And the manage for the future doesn't say, well, we had $17 billion in our funds. Managing for the future says, what's in front of us right now? I don't care how it was dealt out. Let's deal with what it is and look to the future. And so I would ask that we just look at the future and not continue to go back, because we can point a lot of fingers at each other one of us on how we got here. We've got to deal about how to get out of here. And that's what today's amendment's about. And I actually have no problem with the disagreement on how to do this. I'm just going to express why I disagree. And I actually appreciate that we have differences of thought. Because if it was the same thing in here and we all just kind of got along, then we probably, the world just doesn't look really good when we do that.
Mr. Chairman?
Very quickly, I realize it's very difficult to talk about this amendment without talking about a lot of other things. And so that is important. I would just ask that we try to, and I think we've all done it on both sides, try to just tighten it up a little bit. Representative Wilson?
Right, and that's what I'd like to point out what the amendment does, too. I think that's a great thing. we're asking for people to comment on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. We haven't talked about the second half of this amendment, just so those realize. It is also talking about the dividend and the amount of the dividend and split, which I think has been probably the biggest talk out in the public. And it's a 66-33% split, 66 the government and 33% for the dividend on that. So right now it's 1,258. That may change as different things happen from within it. So those who are going to be testifying, I know it's kind of hard to follow us on the earning reserve and sometimes the percent of market value and what that means. But I think what drives it closer to home is people and how they feel about the permanent fund dividend that they were going to get. And so although this does change it from the governor's, I'm assuming the governor's must have been 70-30 because that's 130% was changed. And now it's 66-33, but it's still pretty lopsided on that. So I just want to make sure that people are aware that that is there. I just want to correct one thing from the representative on my right. I'm not frustrated. It really is just about I run a private business, and before I can spend money, I have to know how much money I'm bringing in. It doesn't matter whether it comes from sales that I make or money that I want to invest myself, but before I make my budget at the beginning of the year to see how much I can put into advertising and put into maintenance of the building and all those, I know how much money I have. And it seems like not just this year, but it seems like we make that mistake a lot where we're not discussing how much money we have until we're well into the process. So it's just more pointing out that if we really want to get on top of things, amendments like this or discussion like this really should have happened the first week we got here, because I think if we could all somewhat have agreed on how much money we're going to try to spend, then we'd have those harder discussions on whether there's any other decreases that can make, maybe or maybe not, or where they could have been, and then where that difference was going to come from on the gap. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the question of really potential disagreement was the sustainability of 5 1/4 or 4.75, and I'd like to bring Mr. Teal to the table to see if he can give us Sledge Finance opinion on that.
Mr. Teal? And if you could put yourself on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm David Teal, Director of Legislative Finance Division. And I'm not sure whether you wanted me.
And Representative Seaton.
Thank you. I just wanted you to provide the committee comments on the sustainability of different draws that have been considered and where we are with the 4.75% draw and whether, you know, how sustainable that is compared to 5 1/4 draw, and not in a single year, because we could draw 8% in a single year if we were only talking 1 year, but just as going forward with a 5 1/4 or a 4.75% draw.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the questions and answers here have demonstrated a really solid understanding of the issues. So I don't think I need to back up too much about what the draw does and how long it, and sustainability. I think if you look at the numbers themselves and say, well, this should be pretty easy. You can take 6.5% earnings and subtract 2.25% for inflation. That means you can pay out 4.25. We know, and I don't think I need to go through the 5-year moving average thing that makes it so that the nominal payout is actually higher. The rate that you stayed at 4.25 is really less when you look at the 5-year averaging. So that a 5.5% nominal payout is still conservative, and you should be gaining on inflation at a 4.5% payout. A 4.75% payout is slightly aggressive. The real value of the fund should increase if we earn 6.5%, but part of that increase would be attributable to the royalty money that flows into the fund. At 5%, it's aggressive, but it's not out of line. I think that the Commissioner of Revenue and Angela Rodell from the Permanent Fund have said that a 5% payout would be okay, aggressive, but probably doable. I think the only thing I'd like to add to your discussion is that as long as there are deficits, you have a problem here, because it almost doesn't matter what payout rate you say you're going to pay. If you have deficits that eliminate the CBR, which at $900 million to $1 billion a year deficit means two more years of the CBR, so then you look at that and say, well, we're going to pay out 4.75. But if that leaves you a $900 million deficit with no reserve account to draw it from, so you end up drawing it from the earnings reserve account, with your POMV payout, maybe 4.75, but then it's 4.75 plus another million, or billion, I should say, not million. And then the rate is substantially higher, and it is unsustainable. The real value of the permanent fund will fall. The earnings reserve will begin to dwindle. So, again, it's to something Representative Pruitt said, that until you balance the budget, and whether you do that through taxes or reductions, it doesn't matter for this purpose. To determine the draw from the earnings reserve account and make it sustainable really means you have to fill the deficit first. So I think for today, what you're looking at is a 4.75% draw, which is sustainable and should keep pace with inflation for the permanent fund. But in order to keep pace with inflation, you cannot draw more than the 4.75 as unscheduled draws.
Thank you. Do we have any further questions or comments? Thank you, Mr. Teal. Are we ready to vote on the amendments? Briefings. House Finance back on record, 3 or 4 p.m. Okay. Is the objection to replacement HSAP-3 maintained?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
The objection is maintained. If the Secretary could please call the roll.
Representative Gettenberg.
Yes.
Representative Kalsoff.
Yes.
Representative Ortiz.
Yes.
Representative Pruitt.
No.
Representative Thompson.
No.
Representative Sultan.
No.
Representative Wilson.
No.
Representative Guerra.
Yes.
Representative Grimm. Representative Foster.
Yes.
Representative Seaton.
Yes.
Six yeas, four nays.
And so on a vote of six yeas to four nays, replacement HSAP-3 has been adopted. And Kutcher Seaton, if you could introduce your next amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move SASP-4 and HSAP-5 together.
Object.
Object.
We have an objection to the amendments and not the bundling.
Objection. No, to putting them together.
Oh, okay. There's an objection to bundling them. Okay. Representative Seaton, is it okay?
Mr. Chair, I'd move SASP-4.
Okay, and there's a motion to move HSAP-4, and there's an objection.
Objection.
Okay, and Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. HSAP-4 deletes Section 8E, which would have transferred approximately $1.45 billion from the earnings reserve account to the principal of the Alaska Permanent Fund to offset the cost, the effects of inflation on the principal of the fund during the FY16 through FY18. And thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Discussion? Representative Seaton?
Yeah.
Pruitt?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So obviously, I mean, I as I highlighted earlier and as I've highlighted in the past, I consistently believe that we need to inflation-proof the corpus. I've been arguing for this for 4 years, in spite of some of the, you know, not being successful to argue it. But if the pressure is going to be on us to control our budgets, and we are now seeking to potentially utilize the earnings reserve, the one thing we can't do is we can't devalue the corpus. We have to protect it. And but I'm going to remove my objection because back to the conversation I had earlier, this is for the previous 3 years. I fought and I've lost. I get it. I understand the momentum's not there. So I will remove my objection on this one, but not because I agree with the decision, but because I recognize that the momentum and the decision and the fight that we've had is in the past, and we're moving forward, and we can talk about this year's in the next amendment. So with that, I remove my objection.
Objection has been removed, and Representative Guerra objects. Representative Guerra?
Just briefly, I don't really mean to object, but just to be clear, the roughly $62 billion that's in the permanent fund is the combination of what's in the principal and what's in the earnings reserve. And that amount will remain the same regardless of whether this amendment passes. I think this amendment recognizes that the state has done a poor job solving its fiscal gap. Without pointing any fingers, there's a huge fiscal gap, $2.7 billion or $2.5 billion, pick your number. Or if you want a real construction budget, closer to $3 billion. Which would put people on the street working. But until the state figures that out, however it is, on which side of the aisle sort of prevails, we got to figure it out. And until then, before I was in the majority, there were 2 years of not inflation-proofing the permanent fund. Now that I'm in the majority, the fiscal gap remains until the state figures it out. But this money remains in the permanent fund. It's in the earnings reserve portion of it. And I think it would be smart to start putting money in the principal once the state figures out how to deal with the $2.7 billion budget deficit, which hasn't happened in 5 years.
Any further discussion? Representative Wilson?
Yeah, I just want to make sure that people understand, yes, it's all counted the same, but I also agree that that we should be putting it back in as we see our revenue grow. I hope we don't forget this amount, and maybe some intent language might be nice to have in here that kind of like we wanted the marijuana board to pay back, we should also be paying this back when we have the opportunity. But where the difference is that if we move that now, it moves from the earnings reserve into the corpus. The corpus can't be touched without a vote of the people. So although it's being utilized the same way in making sure that it does good work for us, there is a major difference between whether or not it's in the corpus or the earnings reserve. And that's why we have that amendment before us. I just want to make sure that everyone understands that there is a difference on how it can be spent or whether it could even be spent. Thank you.
Any further comments?
I withdraw my objections. Sorry.
Objections withdrawn. Any further objections? Seeing none, HSAP 4 has been adopted. Representative Seaton, your next amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move HSAP 5.
Object.
Is an objection, Representative Seaton?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. SAP 5 deletes Section 8F, which would have transferred an estimated $943 million to offset the effects of inflation during FY19.
Representative Pruitt.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. While I recognize that we've made policy decisions over the last 3 years to not inflation-proof, and hence the reason I removed my objection on the previous one, I don't think that we need to continue. I think that we have an opportunity this year to recognize that in front of us is the possibility of inflation-proofing for this year, the $943 million. Whether you agreed with the decision made over the last 3 years or not, whether, like myself, didn't, we can come together, I hope, in this conversation and recognize that today we have the opportunity to continue to protect that corpus. And we had a great year this last year, and in terms of the earnings of the fund, and to ensure that there is the value that remains in the long term that is not available to us to spend, it is appropriate to move it over. I agree that the $62 billion is the whole amount. But over the last 4 years, the amount that has been, that technically is considered part of the corpus has not changed because we have not moved any over. So let's not duplicate the what I think many would probably agree with me on in terms of the public, and duplicate a failure in action in terms of the inflation proofing. And let's look at what's in front of us this year and determine that this year we're not going to allow that to happen. And let's protect the inflation-adjusted value of the fund with the $943 million that's in this particular that is in the budget that this amendment is actually proposing to remove.
Further questions, comments? None. Representative Pruitt, is your objection maintained?
Yes, it is.
Your objection is maintained. Secretary, please call the roll.
Representative Kausok.
Yes.
Representative Ortiz.
No.
Representative Pruitt.
No.
Representative Thompson.
Yes.
Representative Tilton.
No.
Representative Wilson.
No.
Representative Guerra.
Yes.
Representative Grimm.
Yes.
Representative Gatenberg.
Yes.
Representative Seaton.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
Yes.
7 yeas, 4 nays.
And so on a vote of 7 yeas to 4 nays, HSAP 5, the amendment has been adopted. Let's move over to the next amendment. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I move HSAP 6.
Object.
We have an objection. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amends Section 9F by adding the not-to-exceed amount of $500,000 retirement plan sponsor costs instead of leaving an open-ended appropriation.
Okay. And
I remove my objection, Mr. Chairman.
The objection has been removed. Are there any further objections? Seeing none, HSAP 6 has been adopted. Representative Seaton, Amendment Number 7.
I would like to move SAP 7 and 8 as jointly together.
That's fine.
Okay. And no, are there any objections to – thank you, Representative Wilson. Representative Seaton.
SAP 7 deletes Section 14A, the open-ended unrestricted general fund appropriation for Medicaid services that was requested by the governor. Given the budgetary implications of the Medicaid program, it would be unwise for the legislature to grant unlimited UGF without program review. And SAP 8 deletes subsection 14B, the open-ended federal receipts appropriation for Medicaid services that was requested by the governor. If additional federal receipts are anticipated, the Department of Health and Social Services may request an expedited approval by submitting a revised program, an RPL, to the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee during the interim. Such RPLs provide a forewarning that a general fund supplemental will likely be forthcoming during the next legislative session.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the reason I'll support this, though I've got some issues with it, is until the state solves its budget crisis, and it hasn't. This is the part where some of the hospitals and providers are going to, in a small way, chip in. When you don't have enough Medicaid funding, you still have to pay the bills. Until you change the law, you still have to pay the bills. So an extra 1,000 people sign up for Medicaid, there's a recession, you still have to pay the bills. And if there's inadequate money at the end of the fiscal year and this state hasn't passed a fast-track supplemental during the session, what's going to happen is that the hospitals and other medical providers are going to wait for their payments. Because you have to make the payments. You're statutorily obligated to do that. The only question is when they get paid. If the department runs out of money in April or May and a budget hasn't been passed, then payment probably comes in July or August. And so I understand why this is being proposed, and I understand the accountability aspect of why this is being proposed, but that would be one of the effects if the department doesn't receive a fast-track supplemental during the session, if they say they need one. But it's where we are with the budget, and I understand the I really understand the accountability point made by the mover of the amendment. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, you know, this, I think, just helps the accountability portion of it. Doesn't make it to where if those costs are actuals, that the department has nothing that they can do. There is another process that they can go with, so we're not just shocked when it comes here. It is also my understanding, and I'm sure the co-chair will correct me if I'm wrong, but I do think there are some adjustments that the department can also make depending upon how many people have signed up and where those costs are coming from. In fact, I'm pretty sure we heard it from them during some of our presentations, that they made some adjustments this last year when they knew it was going there. So this just makes it to where we're a little bit heads up with what's going on that. I also want to say that I appreciate our co-chair making sure we stay on the amendment instead of talking about other things during our presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Seeing none, is the objection maintained?
No, it is not.
The objection has been removed. And so with that, amendments HSAP 7 and HSAP 8 have been adopted. Representative Seaton, your next amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move HSAP 9.
Object.
And we have an objection. Representative Seaton.
And this one makes several changes. It amends Section 22E by relocating and using general funds for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities debt provisions that the governor had funded from the Constitutional Budget Reserve in Section 30B. And it also amends Section 22M by relocating and using general funds for school construction debt provision that the governor had funded from the CBR in 30D. And it also adds Section 24K by relocating and using these general funds for the capitalization of the REAA school fund appropriation that the governor funded from the CBR in Section 30E. And it deletes Section 30B from DOT PF debt, schools construction debt E, which would be REAA school fund capitalization. And all other items in the amendment are just updating section reference numbers.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I just want to make sure I understand that this amendment, so currently in the budget, if this amendment does not pass, although most of these we would say is unrestricted general fund spending, would currently say other funding. Is that correct?
It would be CBR funding if this doesn't pass.
Okay, and a follow-up?
Follow-up.
So the way I'm reading this, this was kind of the governor's way of being able to show that our unrestricted general fund has gone down, which they haven't, and this will just better reflect how our spending's going, especially since these are ongoing appropriations. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Thank you. And with that, I withdraw my objection.
The objection has been withdrawn. Are there any further objections? Seeing none, HSAP 9 has been adopted. Representative Seaton, your next amendment.
Thank you. I move HSAP 10.
Object.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. This amends fund capitalization section 24 by adding a new subsection F, capitalizing the oil and gas tax credit fund with $49 million. This is based on the calculation of 15% of the money received from the oil production tax as was intended when the statute was enacted. The Department of Revenue 2017 fall forecast used a calculation of tax liability without subtracting the per barrel tax credits, so this calculation method does not correspond to the monies received by the state. This results in the DOR calculation of $206 million. Another amendment deletes $27 million appropriation the governor submitted for the interest payment per a proposed bond financing legislation in HB 331 or SB 176, but that's.
Representative Wilson and then Pruitt.
Okay, I kind of heard the $206 million in there. Are we calculating this differently than we used to?
Representative Seaton.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Wilson, the calculation is based on the money received, which was what was the transmittal letter from the Governor Parnell when he transmitted the bill to the legislature, which said money received 10% above $60 projected price or 15% below $60 price would go into this fund. The way it has been calculated is calculated sometimes recently on that would be 10% or 15% of the tax liability calculation before subtracting the credits. So we don't receive that money from the oil companies. What we received from the oil companies is the tax, and then you subtract what they take in tax credits, and that's the amount we receive. So this is the calculation based on the money that is received by the state from production tax credit, 15% of that money. That's this calculation for $49 million. If you want to not talk about the money that's received, if you want to talk about what their tax calculation is before they subtract their credits, then there would be $206
million. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wilson.
I know it's Mr. Alpers here. I just remembered a conversation happening that there was one way that we were coming up with this formula when we were having a lot of the talk about the tax bill and whether or not we could afford the credits, and that there was some type of a memo, if I remember correctly, that the Department of Revenue said that they had been doing it incorrectly. I'm just trying, we had huge conversations about the calculation and that the oil company should have to wait because they knew, you know, when certain things were done, they would get paid. I just want to, you know, I just want to find out whether or not we're, it sounds like we're not calculating the same way we were just a few years ago when we kind of had those conversations. So I'm just trying to make sure that what we were saying is still true or whether or not the $49 would have been the same calculation. So I'm not really, you know, so maybe if you could clarify what the conversation was, I think that would help me.
Representative Seaton.
Sure, and that is in a question that Representative Pruitt asked a year ago as to what this meant, and we got back that there were two ways you can interpret the statute. One way currently would generate $206 million. The other way generates $49 million. I had legislative legal research what was in the intention of the statute, and there was no definition of that other than there was no legislative history of that other than the transmittal letter that the governor sent the bill to the legislature said money received from the oil companies. We do not receive the money that would make the $206 million calculation. We receive the money that makes the $49 million calculation. So that's why this is there.
Okay. And follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wilson.
I honestly get that. I know it's probably surprising, but I do. But I guess, you know, as we sit here on finance and we have conversations with any, I don't care whether it's mining or oil companies, but we are having those conversations with the companies as we're talking about what to do with these backlog of tax credits, and we were getting a lot of pressure saying that we had to pay them that year, and we're like, no, we don't, you know, because the statute says we pay it based on the formula. And what I'm hearing you say is that just recently, since after those talks, after those all those hearings that we have, all of a sudden somebody decided that there wasn't clear on how we should calculate it, and where, in my opinion, and we would have, the 206 would have been in front of us if we had kept doing the same calculation the way that Department of Revenue had been doing it for many, many years. And now, since this new decision, now we're at $40-something dollars. And I just, for me, in those discussions, I feel like now there's kind of like a trust factor because I was fine with them waiting. They weren't fine, but I was fine with them waiting because I believed in what the statute said. But now I'm really questioning it because if this can change and now we're down to 40-something, what makes it change again to a different calculation? Thank you, and thank you for the explanation.
Thank you. Representative Pruitt.
Thank you. And I'd like to have Commissioner Fisher come up, if that's possible, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner, if you could come up and put yourself on the record.
And while he's coming up, I have one other question for the sponsor of the amendment. And last year, in the budget, which calculation did we use?
Representative Seaton.
Last year in our budget, we had reduced a calculation by 50%. So we were trying to remember what the number was. It was 77. It was 37 million because I think the original estimate in that calculation was 77 million. So we had in our budget 37 million dollars was what we had going out of this committee and going across out from the House. And in the end, we compromised with the Senate. They wanted to pay 100 million, and we compromised at 77.
Which was the minimum amount based on the structure, based on the statute as it had been read for the previous years prior. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Mr. Chair, if I could ask the commissioner.
If you could maybe, or we'll go ahead with the question.
Yeah.
We'll have them put themselves on the record.
Yeah, I think they'll know how to put themselves on the record, et cetera, Mr. Chair. First, Commissioner Fisher, what is the desire of the administration? How should we handle this particular year? Recognizing that we are removing language you initially asked us to do because we have not passed that bill, and so we're currently operating under the current law. How is the current law defined and recognized by the Department of Revenue?
Commissioner Fisher.
Thank you. My name is Sheldon Fisher. I'm the commissioner designee from the Department of Revenue. And so to give a little background, the department has issued a revenue sources book for the last number of years, and that revenue sources book, it was issued just in the fall, and it has the $206 million is what we would estimate that that tax credit minimum statutory liability under the current statute. And so as you've noted, the administration's position is that there's a method in front of us. It's the legislation that has not passed that we think is prudent and appropriate, but that is founded on this notion that there's going to be, it's discounted based on a stream of payments that recognizes the higher amount that what we sometimes consider the gross amount. And so I think we feel like that is what we've communicated and consistently applied and should be applied this year as well.
Can I follow up, Mr. Chair?
There
were several years where the governor chose to veto some funds. But when he vetoed, what did he veto those numbers down to?
Through the chair, Representative Pruitt, the state, both the legislature and the administration, have always paid at an amount that is the equivalent of the gross amount of the liability. So the higher number that's being discussed today, it's consistent with that formula.
And follow up, Mr. Chair.
Representative Pruitt.
And then last year, the legislature themselves, without the need of the veto pen, calculated it in the same manner. Is that correct?
Through the chair, that's right. I mean, I think the discussion that has been described here today is accurate, that the portion of that was in the operating budget and then another portion was added in the capital budget, but the sum of those two equated to the higher formula.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
So obviously you have a fall and a spring forecast. And what you indicate in the fall forecast, sometimes you can have a different number in the spring forecast. Over each of those last couple years, have we adjusted the initial amount as proposed by the administration that was based on the fall? In the end result, whether it was through the veto pen or whether it was through our agreement last year, did we still come to a conclusion of the gross calculation but based on what the spring numbers were?
I'm going to let, since I wasn't here, I'm going to let Mr. Alper respond to that.
Put yourself on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ken Alper, Tax Division Director, Department of Revenue. Through the Chair, Representative Pruitt,
that we'll go backwards in time as far as you like. We'll start with last year. The fall 16 revenue source book number would have been $74 million. That was based on, as Commissioner Fisher calls it, the gross calculation, the percentage of the tax calculation before application of credits. It was based on that 74 that Chair Seaton's earlier comment about last year's Finance Committee budget of $37 million was half of that number. The number that by the time the spring forecast came, that 74 was adjusted upward to 77, and that was ultimately the amount that the legislature appropriated to between the two bills, the operating and capital bill. For FY17, the 2016 session, the number discussed during the regular session from memory was in the neighborhood of 50-something million dollars. That number went down to $30 million. The actual amount, that was the 1 year there was an actual veto. The legislature passed a $30 million appropriation in one place and a subsequent $430 million in another place with a CBR linked to it. That's the portion that Governor Walker vetoed, resulting in the $30 million appropriation. And again, that $30 million would have been the larger number. It is the same calculation that got us the $30 million for FY17 that gets us the $206 million for FY19. The year before that, the FY16 budget, although there was some discussion in session and the number $91 million was kicked around as the statutory language, what was actually ultimately appropriated was $500 million. The governor did a partial veto. What had been passed by the legislature was an open-ended language that said the amount requested is appropriated, estimated to be $700 million. The governor struck out that language and replaced it with the number $500 million.
So, Mr. Chair, so I think it's safe to say over the last 3 years, at minimum, of course, highlighting the first year was actually more than what the minimum amount was, but whether through veto pen or whether through legislature on their own without the veto pen, we have established a precedence of using the gross numbers as our minimum tax for calculation to be able to from which we pay. Is that a correct statement?
Representative Pruitt, through the chair, that has been our practice. That has been our analysis. I can't say that we contemplated the alternative. We simply went forward on the assumption that that's what the calculation was. The issue that there might be another way of calculating it was not something we were considering before this year. I think it's also fair to point out, Representative and Mr. Chairman, the difference between the two numbers in previous years would have been relatively low, $10, $20 million, something like that. There are a couple of idiosyncrasies in the FY19 revenue calculation and the relatively higher oil price, relatively lower oil company spending, that suddenly the delta between the two calculation methods is somewhat larger, in the neighborhood of $150 million.
And follow up, Mr. Chair. And then the other side of this is the impact in terms of you deal with and you have relationships with the people who are supposed to be receiving these, as well as you have conversations on an international scale with the banks that might be loaning this money. How would a change in the way we read the statute from the last couple years to this year, in your relationships with these individuals, what do you think the effect could be? And I recognize that could mean the people, the recipients, which it could be the companies, and there's a secondary piece that could be the lenders, the investment people, those out there that are in a kind of third party.
This is Sheldon Fisher again. I'm going to answer that question, and if this isn't responsive, please come back to me. But I'm going to answer that question more in terms of my impression of kind of the impact on this segment of the industry. First of all, these tax credits, and you all know this, but just in case listeners have any misunderstanding, this tax credit does not go to the major companies. These tax credits go to smaller producers, and part of the motivation of instituting the tax credits initially was that the legislature believed there was value in attracting small producers to Alaska to provide additional competition for the development and exploration of oil, particularly in the North Slope. And because they're smaller companies, they don't necessarily have deep sources of capital. The majors, I think, have a lot of assets, and they can withstand variation and changes. The smaller companies struggle. And so I think it will be a financial hardship. I would imagine that some of these companies will either severely curtail or even maybe shut down operations for a time without kind of cleaning this issue up. And part of the issue is not just that they need this money, but that, as you've alluded to, they have at times borrowed money from other sources on the expectation that the state would be paying based on a certain schedule. And we have been in discussion with a couple of banks that have been very active in this space in Alaska, lending to these smaller companies, that have basically said because these debt instruments are in forbearance or in default, that they are not in a position today to continue lending. One of the benefits of the bill we proposed is that we believe it would kind of clean that slate and allow these companies to go back and to start access capital in ways that they've been able to do in the past. So a long answer perhaps to the question, but I think that it will continue to be a financial hardship on these companies and reduce their economic activity in the state.
And kind of a clarification.
Representative Pruitt.
And I appreciate that. That point was very very good and very valid. But in terms of, and maybe this goes beyond just these particular members, redefining a statute for which we've set precedence over the last several years and reading it now in a different manner. Maybe we're not just talking about this particular segment, but if we do that in other, if we are seen as redefining a statute that we've set precedent on, how do you see that impacting our ability to have the trust within any group out there that we might be associating with?
I do think that this is a concern, or needs to be a concern for all of us. I have shared with some of you that the department, the state, went out and marketed aggressively to try to attract these companies, made representations about how the state would behave in terms of paying on these credits. There's a somewhat famous now picture of a moose that's holding a big wad of cash and saying, if you'll come to Alaska, we'll make this available to you. And so I share the statement that a number of you have made that these companies relied on those statements, but if they didn't, they should have at least done more diligence and understood the statute and the framework of the statute. But I think this step where, again, we've kind of gone from a regime in which we made statements, behaved in a way that attracted them by paying credits as they were issued, in the current period, to a period where began to pay based on the statutory formula, and now, as Director Alper has said, the statutory formula has become a large number. If we were to redefine that again to, in essence, favor the state and reduce that expense, I do think there's a credibility issue that would harm the state, both in this industry, but more generally.
I think Director Alper.
Mr. Alper. Through the chair, Representative Pruitt, I think that the fact that this is subject to debate on a year-to-year basis is itself a source of uncertainty in the industry, that this is an obligation eventually the state's going to have to clear. And whether it's $200 million now, which would mean, let's say, the existing universe will go away in 5 years, or $50 million, where it could take as much as 20 years, that makes a big difference to the people who are on the other side of the transaction. And really, the administration's position isn't so much one number or the other, but let's get past this era by passing legislation that is not in this committee, and I shouldn't be speaking to it, but should that happen, we can set all of these issues aside, clear the decks now at no loss to the state, and not have to worry about how much to appropriate other than interest payments in future years.
And Mr. Chair, thank you. And recognizing that we haven't passed that, and so what we're currently in front of us is trying to get these things paid off. I think the point was made very appropriately. This is a debate we can have over the next 5 years, or this debate we can have over the next 20 years. Either way, we're changing the statute, changing the manner in which we read a statute that we have set precedence by, not only from the governor and his vetoes, but also in terms of what we decided as a legislature last year we were going to settle on. And we didn't just settle on the number that was estimated even to come out of the fall. We adjusted it accordingly to make sure it fit the gross number it passed in the end. We all signed off on it through votes or not votes in the end. What passed from the legislature was essentially a sanctioning, an agreement that we agreed with the way that the governor had read it over the previous years, that it was defined at this gross number. And, of course, hence the concern about this, the number being at 49 as opposed to being at the 206. And I'm interested in continued conversation. Appreciate you, gentlemen, being here.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, let's take a brief at ease. Minutes is back on record, and we are currently on HSAP 10, the amendment dealing with the capitalization of the oil and gas tax credit fund.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Pruitt.
I would like to offer a conceptual amendment to this amendment, and that changes the $49 million to $206 million.
Okay, a conceptual amendment has been
So that I move conceptual amendment 1 to HSAP 10 as just stated, $49 million to $206.
Are there any objections? Representative Seaton, do you have any comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just believe that we should take the statute as it came to the legislature, and as the legislature understood it, we were paying either 10 or 15% of the money we received from the production tax into this tax credit fund. The current calculation is we pay over 50% of what we receive in oil tax credits to the, over 50% of what we would receive in total production taxes in this tax credit fund. So we are calculated to receive under the minimum tax calculations about $302 million, and we would be paying out, here's about $206 million to the tax credit fund. And I don't think that anyone in the legislature anticipated that when we had a provision that said we would pay 10 to 15% of the money we received, that we were anticipating being in the place of paying probably 60 to 70% of all the money we receive in production taxes to the tax credit fund. So I will oppose the amendment.
Representative Wilson?
I'm going to support the amendment because I assumed the Department of Revenue knew what they were talking about. They're the ones that came forward with the interpretation of the statute. We utilized that information then as we had huge debates on bills and whether or not we should pay it. So again, there was no correction made then as well. We have people who have been waiting for this fund to be in what we expressed, at least on the Finance Committee as I was sitting there, that this is the calculation. If that had been brought up at that point and we were having a different kind of discussion, then I would believe much differently. But how you could go this many years and go one way, then all of a sudden, just kind of out of the blue, oh, oops, I guess we messed up. Our word is all we have at the end of the day. And the interpretation is all we have at the end of the day. And we've utilized it to such a point where, and you'll see it in court too, that you can set precedents even though it might have been able to go another way. But we set it, and now it just seems like when it's to our advantage to go with a smaller number than what we would have had calculated otherwise, man, you want to kill an industry? This is absolutely the way to kill an industry, is when you take and you say it's done this way, and then all of a sudden when finally it may benefit the small companies are doing everything they can to stay alive, oh, well, we made a mistake, and now we're talking, and this is not a small amount, Mr. Chairman. This is substantial to these smaller companies, because I want to reiterate again, this is not the big three companies. These are the small ones, as we heard the commissioner just say, that came here because of things that we said as a state. And even though we were able to say you have to wait for your money, which I still think that is what the statute said, and it was good that we could pay so many years in a row without, because we had the money to be able to do it. But now to change the game again, that is wrong in so many ways.
Thank you. Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't think the state has the money to pay four times as much in oil company tax credits as is proposed by this amendment. We are 2 years away from running out of savings and being able to keep the state afloat. And an extra $150 million in oil tax credit payments, I don't see as wise budgeting at this point. In terms of staying consistent with the statute, the law has always been very clear that depending on the price of oil, it's either 10 or 15% of the production taxes that the state collects. It's not 10 or 15% of the production taxes that the state wishes it collected. It's not 10 or 15% of a mythical 35% tax rate that doesn't apply. We know that about $60 a barrel, the tax rate is closer to 10%. And so we pay 10 or 15%
of the money we receive in our production taxes, the goal of the statute was to make sure the state didn't have to pay money it didn't have. So I don't support the amendment to the amendment.
Thank you. Any further comments, Representative Pruitt?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think it's important to make sure that's a clarification in terms of it's again that discussion about whether you feel it's a gross or a net. You can if you're going to indicate the net, then yes, it changes that discussion. I think it's important to talk about the legislative history. It is on another bill, but it's related to this issue. And if you'll allow just the slight leeway, I think you'll understand why the conversation is there, and why I've indicated that we need to follow what we did last year, or in terms of what the legislature did last year. In the discussion in HB 111 last year, there was a CS that came forward through the Senate Resources Committee, and that in that bill they removed the language that in statute that maintained the fund, the oil and gas fund, and the argument was made in that discussion: do not remove the fund because in that statute there is the definition that exists that we're utilizing today of the minimum that's to be paid. And the reason that argument was made was because we needed to ensure that the certainty of having that minimum tax remained for those that would be receiving. And so in turn, this is recent legislative history. We're talking about the will of the legislature, the legislative intent. Well, the legislative intent in discussions last year on a different bill maintained that we wanted to have something that was a minimum tax or a minimum value for which we paid. In addition to that, because that year we decided to set as the precedent, because for the first time we did it without the need of the veto pen, we decided to agree that we were going to utilize that gross number as the valuation. Last year, in two separate actions taken by the legislature, we reaffirmed that we felt that the appropriate numbers to utilize in determining the minimum tax were going to be the way that we had been doing it over the last couple of years, and that's to use the gross numbers. So that's why I offered this conceptual amendment to the amendment. Do I like the idea of spending a whole bunch more this year? No, the point is we do have this debt. We have to ensure that we're going to do it. And short of other legislation out there that might change the amount that we need to pay this year, I think that we need to stick to the precedent that we set as a legislature, that the governor set prior to that, and that we reaffirmed last year in legislative debate through another bill where we were going to maintain the minimum standard and the minimum the statute that required the minimum numbers that later on by signing agreeing on the budget we subsequently agreed to by utilizing the gross numbers. So with that, I would ask for your support, Mr. Chair, and let's follow the precedent that we have staged over the last few years.
Thank you. And so with that, if Secretary could please call the roll on the conceptual amendment to Amendment HSAP 10, that's conceptual amendment number one.
Representative Pruitt.
Yes.
Representative Thompson.
Yes.
Representative Tilton.
Yes.
Representative Wilson.
Yes.
Representative Garrett.
No.
Representative Grimm.
Yes.
Representative Guttenberg.
No.
Representative Kawasaki.
No.
Representative Ortiz.
No.
Representative Seaton.
No.
Representative Foster.
No.
5 yeas, 6 nays.
And so on a vote of 5 yeas to 6 nays, conceptual amendment number 1 to amendment HSAP 10 has failed to been adopted, passed. So with that brings us back to amendment SAP 10. Is there any further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, is the objection maintained?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
The objection is maintained. And with that, Madam Secretary, if you please call the roll.
Representative Thompson.
No.
Representative Tilton.
No.
Representative Wilson.
No.
Representative Guerra.
Yes.
Representative Grant.
No.
Representative Guttenberg.
Yes.
Representative Kawasaki.
Yes.
Representative Ortiz.
Yes.
Representative Pruitt.
No.
Representative Foster.
Yes.
Representative Seaton. 6 yeas, 5 nays.
And so on a vote of 6 yeas to 5 nays, Amendment HSAP 10 has been adopted. With that, let's take a 5 minutes. Actually, Representative Thompson.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to reconsider my vote on HSAP 5.
Thank you, Representative Thompson. I don't see any objection. And so with that, the committee rescinds its vote on HSAP 5. And could the secretary please call the roll on Amendment HSAP 5?
Representative Cortez.
Brief at ease.
House Finance is back on record, and just folks watching on TV so they know, HSAP 5 is in dealing with the inflation proofing of the permanent fund. So with that,
it deletes it, correct.
So, Madam Secretary, if you could please call the roll.
Representative Ortiz.
No.
Representative Pruitt.
No.
Representative Thompson.
No.
Representative Tilton.
No.
Representative Wilson.
No.
Representative Garrett.
Yes.
Representative Grant.
Yes.
Representative Gatford.
Yes.
Representative Kalsak.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
Yes.
Representative Seaton.
Yes.
And so
6 yeas, 5 nays.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. On a vote of 6 yeas to 5 nays, Amendment HSAP 5 has been adopted upon reconsideration. So with that, we will take a 5 minute at ease. Okay. House Finance is back on record at 4:08 p.m. And with that, we are on to our next amendment. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move HSAP 11.
Object.
We have an objection. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment does three things. First, it consolidates Section 24 G and H into a new G that deposits general funds into the public education fund and adds $18 million to general fund to replace $18 million of public school trust fund that was removed on Friday in Amendment HDOE 1. And adds contingency language so that state aid for K-12 education is not double funded if another education appropriation bill, HB 287, is passed. It also consolidates Section 24I and J into a new H for the appropriation of general funds into the Public Education Fund for Student Transportation, and adds contingency language so that the student transportation is not doubled if another education appropriation HB 287 bill is passed. And third, it also adds a separate contingency provision for three other education appropriations made in another education funding bill, such as 287, so that if the other bill is passed, there is no double funding.
Okay. Are there any questions?
And with that, I remove my objection.
The objection is removed. Are there any further questions, comments, objections? Seeing none, HSAP 11 has been adopted. Representative Seaton, your next amendments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move HSAP 12.
Object.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. This amends Section 25 fund transfers by adding a new subsection with a same language used in FY18 budget for the Civil Legal Services Fund.
Okay, and is the objection maintained?
I remove my objection.
The objection is removed. Any further objections? Seeing none, Amendment HSAP 12 has been adopted. Representative Seaton.
I move HSAP 13.
Object.
There's an objection, Representative Seaton.
Thank you. The governor funded the state assistance to retirement programs appropriations from the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund in Section 30, F through L. This amendment changes the fund source back to unrestricted general funds and restores a separate bill section for these appropriations. The amendment deletes $25.5 million savings appropriation, what had been Section 30H, as the Alaska Retirement Management Board did not approve the application of this anticipated savings to the PERS, which is $22.15 million, and TERS, which was $3.35 million state assistance deposits. The amendment also adds intent language directing the ARM Board to consider the funding ratio of the Alaska National Guard and the Alaska Naval Militia Retirement System when recommending a retirement system deposit. This system has a funding ratio of 123%, but the ARM Board approved a resolution setting the deposit at $851,686.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I understand that the Alaska Retirement Management Board did not approve the $25.5 million, but do we know whether it was savings or not?
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's anticipated savings. We don't know whether they will occur because the time frame when they are anticipated to be saved will be in the next year. So it's one of those things when you think something will happen, do you take the savings then or do you take the savings when they actually occur? And you know you did the program that you were going with actually perform. We don't know that it will have that performance. And so that's why we removed the savings at this time. And we generally look at the actuarial and the retirement funds resolutions and what they adopt to adopt those instead of generating others on our own.
And follow up?
Representative Wilson.
And aren't we still behind on our retirement? So I'm just trying to figure out how we could have savings because we're constantly still making yearly payments. So I guess my question is, if this is actually found to, well, first of all, I don't know how it would ever be savings, but let's say it's excess, wouldn't we it be better for us to leave it there so our next year's payment is less because of that? Or does it normally come out?
Representative Seaton.
Well, it's a determination on the functioning of the program, and I really don't want to get into details. I think this is Ag Whip, and of how that we can have somebody come up if you want to know the details of how the program is supposed to work, but we don't realize savings until the program at least has a year to demonstrate itself. It's kind of like if we project what we will be doing with the Medicaid program and say, oh, it's going to save us some money next year, and then we take the savings this year. So that's where we are.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wilson.
I understand why this is back in here. I guess my concern is if we're still making yearly payments, which we are for retirement, maybe my definition of savings is different than this is, because savings only occurs if you're current with your bills. So I'm asking, I don't want to get down into the weeds, I'm just saying, you know, as practice, I want to make sure that if somebody's saying it's savings and we're still having to make a yearly payment, which is pretty, depends upon who does the math on it, how big it is, that nobody would ever see something that, like this as savings until we're caught up and we're not putting general funds back into it. That's where my concern is, not that you're keeping this in there, but how anybody could define it as savings if we're still having to make an additional payment every year to stay up on the actuaries.
And Representative Seaton.
And I think I would just, maybe David Teal could come forward, but I think what we're talking about is a calculated amount that is to be put in, and a new program is supposed to cost less.
Mr. Teal?
For the record, David Teal, Director of Legislative Finance Division, and I think the confusion is over the use of the word savings. By savings, the governor meant I am reducing the contribution by $25 million over what the actuary said. The language removes that reduction and deposits the $25.5 million into the retirement fund.
That makes a lot more sense. No. I just couldn't understand that, you know, if we're making a yearly contribution to it because we're constantly trying to keep up, you know, I was concerned who thinks this is a savings. Now we're just making a smaller payment than we have. That's concerning because that's how we got behind in the first place. And I just also want to just make sure, as people are going to get ready to testify, so this is going to be another amount on the portion that we're changing from what would be the Constitutional Budget Reserve draw to a UGF. So this is gonna, our UGF will grow, but this is another yearly payment on a retirement that we are owed. And also that in our normal practice has been we use whatever is in our general fund. If that can't pay, then it goes to CBR versus doing all this splitting up that seems to be that you're now putting back together. Is that correct?
Representative Seaton.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Thank you very much.
Do you have any further questions? Representative Ortiz?
So I just want to make sure I get this right. The impact of this amendment is to restore a deposit of $25.5 million into the retirement system that the administration's budget proposed to not make. Is that correct?
Representative Seaton?
That is correct.
Thank you.
Can we finally get
there? Okay. Any other comments or questions?
I remove my objection, Mr. Chairman.
The objection's been removed. Any further objections? Seeing none, amendments HSAP 13 has been adopted. Representative Seaton, your next amendment?
I move HSAP 14.
Object.
Representative Seaton?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment deletes Section 29, which used the statutory budget reserve fund to fund the deficit.
Okay. Any questions, Representative Wilson?
Yeah, can you tell me what's in the SBR right now, the statutory budget reserve currently?
I can't tell you.
Representative Seaton?
Thank you. It was 170. I'm getting signals from back, but it's somewhere around 170 or 172 million. But we did use in the bill that we sent over to the other body 78 million for pupil trans. So it depends on how you want to count that. That bill hasn't passed that body, so we haven't subtracted that 78. And that would be 68 if they fund the rest of it from the CBR, because then it was only 68 of that was used, but it was the amount not to exceed.
Representative Wilson?
So was it 78 million or 68 million in that bill?
Representative Seaton?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As it passed our body, we took $1.2 billion, or as it was proposed, it was $1.2 billion, a set amount from the CBR, and there was the amount needed came from the SBR. At that time, it was $67.8 million was going to be in addition to the CBR draw. But the CBR, the 1.2, a round figure, contributed about $10 million to the pupil transportation. So when the CBR vote failed then, since it was the amount necessary for pupil transportation, then it went up to the full amount for pupil transportation, which was basically the $78
million. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I withdraw my objection.
Objection has been withdrawn. Any further objection? Seeing none. HSAP, which one was that?
14
has been adopted. And so with that, Representative Seaton, your next amendment.
I move HSAP 15.
Object.
And we have an objection, Representative Seaton.
And this amendment deletes 30C, the governor's request for an estimated $27 million appropriation from the CBR to pay interest on a financing mechanism to retire oil and gas tax credits. The appropriation should be made via fiscal note to HB 331 or SB 176, creating that financing mechanism. Previous amendment, HSAP 10, capitalized the oil and gas credit fund at 49.
Representative Wilson?
I take my objection back.
Okay. Any further objections? Seeing none, HSAP 15 has been adopted. And Representative Seaton, your next amendments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move HSAP 16.
I object.
Representative Seaton.
This amends Section 30 by adding the necessary annual Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund cash flow borrowing language.
Any comments? Seeing none, is the objection maintained?
I remove my objection, Mr. Chairman.
Objections removed. Any further objections? Seeing none, HSAP 16 has been adopted. Representative Seaton, number 17.
I move HSAP 17.
Object.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment adds two subsections to Section 30, the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund section. New subsection M uses the CBR to balance the FY19 budget after the ERA draw, and new subsection N allows $200 million of the CBR headroom for potential FY19 supplementals, as was done for the FY18 supplementals.
Hey, Representative Pruitt.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Can I ask, the $200 million, where did that number come from?
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. $200 million is an approximate amount that we've used in the past and also last year, just to make sure that there was money appropriated so as the if there were big fire suppression or there was just storms or whatever was necessary, there was some money that the legislature had appropriated that could be used for those things that would be supplementals where when we approve those things, that's where the money comes.
Representative Pruitt?
Yeah, can I follow up? We did $200 million this last year. What did we do the year before? Has this been a consistent number?
Representative Seaton?
It hasn't been a consistent number. I think it's been higher than this in the past. I think it's been up to $500 million. And I think it's been as low as $100 million. But I think that's pretty much been the range between 100 and 500 million. And
Representative Pruitt?
So one of the questions I guess I need to ask is the very first amendment we had was basically an amendment that said don't give us any supplemental. And then here we've got one where we're going to give them $200 million worth of basically headwind in terms of the supplementals. I think this year, based on the fact that last year we made some changes, we've already talked about the removal of language that kind of allowed the open-endedness for the Medicaid, allowed them to catch up, that there should be an expectation that they should be closer in line this year in their actual amounts that they'll be potentially utilizing. So is the $200 million still needed? I mean, I don't know if that number is still necessary, or if it allows us to kind of, if maybe a lower number might allow us the opportunity to kind of, in sequence with the first amendment we passed, where we're discouraging the utilization of supplementals, also, you know, still left that headroom, but does not say, all right, there's $200 million we can deal with and we can manage below that. I'd love to kind of hear some of the thoughts on that.
Representative, did you? Otherwise, Gary. Representative Gare.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand the comments, and I would just say that it was always a concern of mine. When I was in the minority, there was unlimited headroom. So the first CBR vote budget language I was given was, as a minority member, I authorized the majority to use as much money as they needed during the year. And I thought that was a blank check. And I think we ended up putting a number in there of about $500 million to recognize that the CBR vote is both a protection and also we know it takes time out of the legislative session, but for appropriate reasons. But to allow headroom, just make sure that we have one wrangling CBR battle during the year instead of multiple ones. And so I know that I caught the unlimited headroom amount when I was in the minority, and I said, that doesn't seem right. And we settled, I think, on $500 million that year. Just you wouldn't have many CBR battles during the course of the year. Certainly, whatever your views are going to be your views, I can't control that. I'm just trying to give you some history. But I think $200 million is within the more conservative range of numbers that have been used in the past, and way better than the unlimited one that I was presented the first time I was looking at this.
Any further discussion, Representative Seaton?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Supplementals still have to be approved by the legislature. It's just that there's a funding source that's available. But that's what the headroom is. It gives you a funding source so that there's known availability of funds.
Representative Wilson?
I guess for me it's a question on whether or not we want to send a true message or not. I mean, one, you know, and I've heard around the table that we don't have the money and we don't have a plan and we need to watch where our money's going. And I think saying that we don't want to have a supplemental, we know we'll still have some things that will come, but yet we leave it at $200 million. Just seems like we're not really serious about what we said in a previous amendment.
Any further questions, Representative Thompson?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. If I remember correctly, when we did the $500 million headroom, It was because we had expected expenses for AGDC to move forward with their project, and we were trying to make sure we protected what they needed to have done. So we did the CBR draw that high. They didn't use all that. They didn't use very much, but it was something that we did because of the AGDC's expected need to move forward with their project, and that's why it was so high.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Sure. Representative Pruitt?
Yeah, thank you. And I appreciate that's kind of how I understood it as well. I appreciate that, Representative Thompson. Mr. Chair, I mean, I appreciate the history lesson, but I think that to the point that Representative Wilson just made, if you're the administration and you're analyzing what you have available to spend, you might say, well, all right, it will be easier to get a supplemental through that fits within the range that's already been approved to be utilized from the CBR. If your number is $200 million, you might not have the constraints on that. And that's not to say that we have that's not to speak poorly of the administration in any way, but it's just recognizing that when people budget and any sort of business scenario, you have people that they see a budget and they like to manage within that budget. When you know that it's easier to get up to $200 million, you might not focus on trying to maintain within our initial language of the supplemental. So what I'd like to do, Mr. Chair, is offer conceptual amendment number one to HSAP 17 and replace $200 million with $100 million. Still having some headroom in there, but maybe not at the same level.
Okay, we have a motion for conceptual amendment number one to amendment HSAP 17. Is there any objection? We have an objection. Representative Seaton.
Mr. Chairman, we had $200 million this year. We had $170 million of supplementals. We could have fought on that for a long time. We're not willy-nilly approving supplementals. So I believe that those were all looked at very carefully to make sure that they were necessary and legitimate. And so I don't know that going into next year, whoever's sitting in a seat needing to balance that exactly the same way would set us up well. So I think that $200 million is a reasonable amount.
Do we have any further discussion? Seeing none, is the objection maintained? Representative Pruitt?
I apologize. I didn't get to catch you early enough there. I think the only thing that I would speak to that is the $92 million in Medicaid. That was higher than expected, I believe, because the goal was to try to clean up some of the past years or not allow for that. We're bumping up to the end of the year, and therefore we've only been appropriated X amount, and so therefore we're going to wait to the next year to pay. And I believe we kind of gave them that ability to shore everything up, and that's why we saw some of that being as high as it is. That's not the full reason, but that is a key piece of it. And so considering that $92 million is a large portion of that $170 that's been highlighted, Mr. Chair, that's why I would argue that I think we're in a different situation going to this next year than we are in the current year. And that's why that $100 million is within a range that I believe is appropriate number. So I'd ask for the support.
Thank you. And the objection is maintained?
Yes.
The objection is maintained. If the Secretary could please call the roll.
Representative Tilton.
Yes.
Representative Wilson.
Yes.
Representative Guerra.
No.
Representative Gren.
Yes.
Representative Gettenberg.
No.
Representative Kawasaki.
No.
Representative Ortiz.
Yes.
Representative Pruitt.
Yes.
Representative Thompson.
Yes.
Representative Seaton.
No.
Representative Foster.
No.
6 yeas, 5 nays.
And so on a vote of 6 yeas to 5 nays, conceptual amendment number 1 to amendment HSAP 17 has been adopted. And so that brings us back to the main amendments. Any further comments on that? Seeing none, Representative Pruitt?
You.
No, okay. Okay, so The objection
is not maintained.
Any further objections? No further objections. Amendment HSAP 17 has been adopted. Or it is, has been adopted. 17. As amended, conceptual amendment number one. So with that, let's move to the next amendment. Representative Seaton.
Thank you. I move HSAP 18.
Object.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. The governor's budget includes $20 million for a senior benefits program in Section 1 and included contingency language in Section 33. Legislation is required to extend the program into FY19. This amendment deletes Section 33, the contingency provision regarding the senior benefits program, as the Finance Committee has already adopted HSS 2 to remove the funding from Section 1 of the bill and HSS 3 that added intent to fully fund the program upon reauthorization.
Do we have any objections?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wilson.
And I just want to make sure that people didn't think that we're not going to fund this as a sunset bill, so it has to be renewed. We have passed it on this side and very hopeful that it'll come back very quickly. So we are not deleting the funding from the program because it'll follow into the bill. And with that, I remove my objection.
The objection has been removed. Any further objections? Seeing none, HSAP 18 has been adopted. Representative Seaton, your next amendments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move HSAP 19 and 20 together.
Bundled, that's okay. And do we have an objection for the...
Yes, we do.
Representative Wilson or Representative Seaton?
So I move SAP 19 and 20.
Object.
And HSAP 19 is a technical correction to wording in Section 26, Salary and Benefit Adjustments, changing the word reduced back to adjusted as the governor had submitted. HSAP 20 makes the same change to HB 285, the mental health bill. The committee will recall that we made this same change in the supplemental bill since some monetary terms, for example, furlough days, may not always be a reduction.
Okay. Is the objection maintained?
No, I remove my objection.
Objections removed. Any further objections? Seeing none, HSAP 19 and HSAP 20 have been adopted. And that brings us to, I believe, our final amendments. Oh, no. Representative Seaton, your next amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Brief it is.
Brief it is. House Finance, back on record. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I withdraw HSAP 21 and move replacement HSAP 21, deleting most of the supplementals from the bill.
Is there any objection?
Object.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. This amendment deletes all but one of the supplemental items from HB 286. The FY18 and FY19 statutory designated program receipts appropriation to the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation stays in the bill. All the remaining supplemental items have either been included in HB 321 or will be considered in conjunction with the capital bill. The line numbers refer to the line numbers of the amendments in the document. And Mr. Chair, what we're removing is all the supplementals. Would you like those all read into the record, removing the supplementals from the bill?
I think we're okay, Mr. Representative Seaton.
I just have a question.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So on page 202, number 3, the transfer of the balance of the in-state natural gas pipeline fund to the AK LNG project fund, that is currently in the the fast track supplemental, or is that something new?
Representative Seaton.
Yeah,
if it is. House Finance, back on record, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In response to the question, the date changes are to change those from supplemental 18 items to 19 operating budget items.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Mr. Representative Pruitt.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that I think the one that I don't see on here that's it was the open-ended SDPR appropriation for FY 18-19. That's we are leaving the language as it currently sits in the budget in the bill. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, is the objection maintained?
I remove my objection.
Objection is removed. Any further objections? Hearing none. Amendment replacement HSAP 21 has been adopted. Representative Seaton, your next amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move HSAP 22.
Object.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. This deletes a mental health capital project in the Department of Health and Social Services. The project is mental health essential program equipment, and it is funded with $250,000 of AHC dividend, which is UGF, and $250,000 of MTAR funds. And the amendment shows zero rather than minus 500,000 because the project appears in a capital budget system and the reports track only operating budget amendments. The House always deletes one mental health capital project, and the other body deletes the other or all the other mental health capital projects to make the mental health capital project subject to conference committee action.
Representative Wilson?
That seems really mature, but beyond that. Sorry. I just have a question, even though we're deleting this. Why do we make the distinction on the $250,000 as AHFC dividend fund if it's truly just UGF? Is that an accounting reason that we do that? Or, because I know we had some other things about ADA and their dividend, why did we make that? I just kind of curious why we made that distinction and wouldn't just say UGF.
Representative Seaton.
Mr. Chair and Representative Wilson, I don't have any idea. I think it's just the fund source adopted that we have, but we'll get somebody up here.
Ms. Sanders, if you could put yourself on the record.
For the record, Lacey Sanders, Legislative Finance Division, through the chair, Representative Wilson, it's a tracking code so that we can keep track of how much we're spending of the dividend to make sure that we're not over-appropriating it.
And a follow-up?
Follow-up.
And do we ever get a report that shows us how that dividend was spent? Or do we just have to go back and look through the operating budget that says that this is what was utilized?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, we can run you a report from our system using that fund code if you ever want to see where the money was spent.
You know I do. Thank you. And with that, I remove my objection.
Objection has been removed. Any further objections? Hearing none. HSAP, is that 22? Has been adopted. And let's see here. Yes, briefities. Briefities.
Welcome back to order, and we've gone through all the amendments, and now the Legislative Finance Division and Legal Services will develop new committee substitutes for House Bill 285 and 286. Co-Chair Foster, could I have a motion?
Sure. I move that we give Legislative Finance and Legal Services the ability to make technical and conforming changes when developing the new committee substitute for HB 285 Finance.
Seeing no objection, the motion is adopted. Representative Foster.
I move that we give Legislative Finance and Legal Services the ability to make technical and conforming changes when developing the new committee substitute for HB 286 Finance.
Seeing no objection, the motion is adopted. Is there any further business to come before the committee? Our next meeting will be Wednesday, February 27th at 1:30 p.m. when we will plan to adopt the new committee substitutes for HB 285 and 286, incorporating the amendments that we have been over the last few days. The bills will then be posted on BASIS and made available to the public for public testimony, which will begin on Thursday afternoon. Any questions? Seeing none, we are adjourned at 4:44.